So here we are, we got another chance for life. It's what you want, I can see it in your eyes. You see so clear, it's coming into light. Go on, be wrong, 'cause tomorrow you'll be right. Don't sit around and talk it over, you're running out of time. Just face ahead, no going back now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to part two of Tara Week on Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. I had Tara on, and we had so much fun, we had to find an excuse to do part two. So first off, Tara, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Jesse. Hi, everybody.
So in case someone has not listened to our first discussion, tell us a little about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Tara Giancaspro. I am based in New Jersey. I know that you all are listening to this, but Jesse, as I always say, you can tell I'm from Jersey by the hair. I am currently unemployed, but I'm usually an executive assistant by day, and I am a writer or Substacker by night. I have a Substack where I talk about different things I've experienced during the week, personal essays, pop culture. I just wrote an essay on Italian cookies and how good they are. And it was funny. It wasn't just like a sentimental journey into Italian cookies. I've also put out music. Largely, I just flap my gums to anyone who will listen. And that's me.
I love that. And we had so much fun the last time you were here. If you guys have not heard that episode, finish this one. Then go back and listen to that one. It'll be a nice little treat. So one of the things,
Jesse and I from the past.
Yes. So one of the things we talked about last time, we were talking about different things, and you brought up this movie Sing Street. And I shared with you that I had never seen it. And you're like, oh, you've got to see it. It's just great, Jesse. I don't remember if we did it while we were recording or afterwards. We said, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to set this up where I'm going to watch it. We're going to have you come back and talk about it. That's what we're doing. In case you guys do not know, Sing Street was a film released in 2016, directed by John Carney, written by Simon Carmody and John Carney. And I did not know any of the actors except the parents. The parents of the lead were actors I recognized, but the actual male lead and female lead, I did not know anything about them. Did you know anything about them before you went into the movie?
No, I think I had been familiar with the creative team, like John Carney. For folks at home, if you've seen the movie once, that was adapted to a Broadway production. So John has been involved in some musical productions like that. So I think that's probably how I had been made aware of this. I watched it, I remember, right before I started my first ever executive assistant job 7 years ago. So I can tell you exactly when, because I wrote a little review about it at the time. I know of Lucy Boynton now because she was in Bohemian Rhapsody, which is the Freddie Mercury biopic, and she's done some other work since. But yeah, I think they deliberately went for a cast that wasn't very well known, which adds so much to this. I think if it was Timothy Chalamet in the lead and we knew who Timothy was at that point, it wouldn't have the same impact as us seeing kids that look like they are just pulled from the streets of Ireland.
Yeah, and he was in Coda, though I'm trying to connect. I'm seeing on IMDb. I don't remember what role he played on that. So I did talk about Aidan Gillen plays the dad. We know him from Game of Thrones, playing one of the Tiss villains, that Littlefinger. Yes. And then the Maria Doyle Kennedy played the mom, Penny. And I loved her, and she was an Orphan Black.
Yes,
but also she was especially great in Outlander, playing a great part in Outlander. I was really cool to see the adult, I found this movie because you told me. You tell me what's your experience and how did you find it?
So, yeah, I think I had only found it through that John Carney connection. I guess it had just been getting posted about. Maybe I saw something on Twitter and I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to watch this. I watched it and I just fell in love with it. The music is beautiful. The story is sweet and it touched on a cultural time that I didn't really have a lot of knowledge about, which is the conservative Ireland of the 80s and the laws that were put in place, the sort of morality laws. And this isn't something I'd really known much about. So it proved an interesting setting that drew me in. The music drew me in. And I just thought it was a sweet, hopeful story. It's written well, it's funny. It has everything you would want. There's a little action, there's music, there's romance, there's drama. It's just one of those movies. And I thought it was so sweet. And it's one that I recommend to a lot of people because I know a lot of people who would enjoy it. Like, it's that coming of age tale. And especially for music fans, for these kids to discover music and it to be their ticket out of an environment that isn't serving them and holds them back in this conservative Catholic school kind of way. It's just a nice story. And it's, I don't know if I'd say it's not a G-rated film, but it's not like heavy nudity or like super sexual or a ton of cursing or violence. It is a family movie in that way. So I think it's something that you could watch with your kid and bring an interesting conversation about as well. But yeah, I love that it was about standing out, finding your voice, quite literally in this case, as singers and musicians. And it was just sweet. Who doesn't want a little bit of hope?
Yeah, after I'd watched it, I sent you a quick message saying that it reminded me a little bit of Blinded by the Light,
Which I love.
which is just an amazing film all about helping this guy set in the 80s, finding Bruce and discovering that as this Pakistanian person in the UK, that this guy from New Jersey is somehow telling his story is just amazing. Yeah, I was really happy with that. And so let's start with the music. Once again, I have to show my blind spot. I did not know who was writing and producing this music, even after I looked in IMDb and Wikipedia, even though they named the bands, they were not people I was aware of. Are you, Tara?
A little bit. I'm going to pull up right now the actual soundtrack in my little Apple Music because they have the credits now. That's been
Okay.
a new feature for most of you. I'm sure most of you use Spotify. I use Apple Music. And while you used to be able to view the lyrics and they were very accessible, now you get to actually view the credits, which is very pleasing to me because I do like to know. In terms of your, so Gary Clark, I know of. Gary Clark is a musician of some note, but and John Carney again, I'm familiar with him, but Carl and Ken Papenfuss, I do not know. I pretty confidently do not know the Papenfusses. I'm probably not even saying that correctly.
Probably someone is now talking to their iPod, their podcast player, got iPod, mentioning that we should know who Gary Clark is, but I did not. And so it's from a band, and I'm pulling it up in Wikipedia as we talk, that
There's Gary Clark Jr. I have to assume it was the same. It's not Gary Clark and Gary Clark Jr. Gary Clark is his own person, no relation. And yeah, and he's his own guy who works with David Bowie, Chris Martin, Miguel Bosé, Melanie C, Natalie Imbruglia. So he's successful in his own right, probably outshadowed by Gary Clark Jr., who is like a live performing, touring musician. But
What is very confusing is Gary Clark is from Dundee, Scotland. And he was the front man from the 80s pop band Danny Wilson. All right, that's confusing because there's two names. Is Danny
yeah.
Wilson, right? So that was it. I really thought one of the most interesting parts of the film is that how our hero sees the girl. This is the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. He's just all over and he goes to talk to her and she's too cool for him. She, and he goes, Yeah, I'm putting together a band. And she's, oh, that would be cool. You want to be in our music video? Yes.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to, I love the scene in Love Actually,
Which
where,
this also feels evocative of,
yes.
especially with Thomas Brodie Sangster
Yeah.
creating his, I have to learn how to play the drums.
Yeah, and it's that's one little tiny part with your problem. You don't play the drums. Psh.
Yeah. It's that sort of, it's like a Three's Company gambit, those like
Yeah.
French farce gambits.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Which one of the things I really love is listen to Penn Jillette's podcast, and he one of his co-hosts is Matt Donnelly, and Matt Donnelly has went from being an improv to now he is building a career in magic. And he talks about that teller of Penn and Teller says, always says, yes. If they tell you, can you do this? Yes. Then go figure it out. Do you want to do this? Yes. Then go figure it out.
I know people in the job market will do this. Admittedly, I've done this on job
Yeah.
applications since I've been laid off. I'm like, yeah, I know this particular CRM software.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of my best pieces of advice, I can't remember the guy who wrote it, but it was a business book, and he said, if you're going to be given a task and there's no way to get out of it, don't waste your energy trying to convince the company not to sign you the task. Just take it and spend that energy figuring out how to do it.
Yeah.
And I know that often you joke, they joke about actors do that. Can you ride a horse? Oh yeah, absolutely. And then
Totally.
I'll and if I when I get the job, I'll figure that out later. Right now is just getting to the next step. So it was really wonderful. And the other thing that's really cool in the story, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Tara, is the idea of instead of putting the band back together, we are going to make a band. Right? This like, how do we
Yeah.
go from not knowing anything? Right? And his buddy is, I don't play any music, but I
Yeah.
know someone who does and connects it. So talk to me a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, I just think it's a great simple concept. You could have made this in the actual 80s and it would have been a great Ferris Bueller style movie of
Yeah.
okay, boy likes girl likes musicians. Boy becomes musician, question mark. And this movie, they do set up the little kind of pitfalls for the kids, but again, it's just such a hopeful movie that does come together in this way. And I think I would rather see that than it to blow up in the kid's face when he's humiliated because, oh, but we never really learned how to do this, but the girl is so impressed by his effort that she gives him a kiss anyway. I like that they had their own journey, and whether or not it was about getting the girl, it becomes about so much more.
Yeah, because it is, and there's a whole discussion. His family is going through tough financial times, and his family is breaking apart. His mother and father end up getting a divorce, and his older brother is very much the guy who put away his dreams. You don't hear about that till later in the film,
And
where
that's my
he's,
favorite character.
yeah, where he's just, I didn't do any of this. And then when he sits there and pushes them to try, it's really, I think, really lovely. One good thing that Connor has going for him is that when he does, they meet a guy that is can play anything, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's another good story to say is sometimes what's just as important, what you know, is who and who you put on your team so that you can make these things happen to get someone who does this. And I think that one of the other things to love in the film, as you talked about, is Connor gets better. He gets better at singing. He gets better at writing. And him and his buddy end up being this whole little John and Paul working together.
Yeah.
I love that dynamic they had.
Yeah. No, it's great. And again, they chose to make positive choices. The characters all have some kind of positive stride. It doesn't break down in the way that you would expect. The brother character, again, I wish I could have read. I probably could read the script. And now that I've said this out loud, I probably will go and look for the script. Yeah. I would love to read all of the character notes that were created about the brother.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Yeah. Also, as something the listeners wouldn't be able to digest, but I can tell you about, this was adapted into a musical that was supposed to go to Broadway.
Oh.
So I saw it at the New York Theater Workshop, which is an off-Broadway theater. And again, they're workshopping shows that they will likely try to bring to Broadway, such as Slave Play, which was brought to Broadway, which I saw there. Sing Street was done. Everything was beautiful. I sobbed, which I didn't cry when I watched the movie. I cried when I watched the musical, especially okay. when they did their production of the song Up, which I think Up is one of the sweetest songs I've ever heard. It's just, it gets me emotional even yeah. talking about it. And the Broadway version, they made it longer and they added more of a kind of gang vocal to it. And it just, it sends it higher. So I saw that probably at the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. Then 2020 came, and originally it was going to go to Broadway. It was set to transfer to the point where Sing Street on Broadway had social media accounts up and running, and the kids that had all been cast for the musical were doing live streams from home, as everybody was doing at that point. And just, oh, we're going to sing some of the songs. We're going to do interviews with the cast. And I remember watching that and thinking, oh, God, when this thing is over, I'm so excited to see it again because I loved it so much the first time. And it has never come to Broadway. It did a, like, after most of the pandemic, because we're still in this pandemic, it had announced a couple of weeks in Boston. And I thought to myself, you know what? If they're workshopping it again because they brought in a new cast because the other kids aged out, I'm going to wait till it comes to Broadway. It hasn't come to Broadway, and I'm guessing it never will. I'm so glad I got to see it once. It breaks my heart all the time. That's my like white whale of I want to see this on a Broadway stage before I die because it's such a great, you can imagine what it's like on a stage. You've got the kids and you've got all these scenes like where they're performing at the school dance and they kept it in the version I saw, which again was being workshopped on a smaller stage. They kept it a pretty simple production, but you don't need much to tell this story visually. They could add things like fun 80s video kind of props and riffs, and they could do that. But so much of it is you're looking at these kind of piers and ports and the water, because that does wind up taking on meaning in the movie, the water and them wanting to cross the sea. The thing that I love the most is there is a song called Go Now that you hear at the end of this movie. And I'm not going to spoil what happens during this.
Okay.
And in the Broadway version or the off-Broadway version, the brother is the one who sings this song. He gets this big moment at the end where after he shows up in different moments and talks about who he was and, as you said, giving up his dreams. And it's a real quiet tragedy, in my opinion. And I think we could see this a lot in a lot of Bruce's characters. The character who wants to leave New Jersey, never does. The stoic factory worker who has the heart of a poet, but the hands of a mechanic. And that's something I think we love about Bruce, that character study. That's always been something close to my heart as someone who comes from a blue collar background. And who would my dad have been if, like, this was the life set before him? Those kinds of things. And so Go Now is sung by the brother, and then the whole cast joins in for the second half of it. But when I saw the Broadway version, that song made me sob, because it's, you're never going to go if you don't go now. Like, you have to be present in your life. You have to take that chance. It's a song that to me doesn't not remind me of Born to Run. There's the hope of escape. And we don't know if they're going to work out. We don't know if they're going to get out of Jersey. But it's about that chance. It's about saying yes and taking that chance and lying and saying that you have CRM or Photoshop or horse riding skills, as we talked about. And when this is my, like, little emotional attachment to Go Now. Again, I loved it so much. And then during 2020, my grandmother became very ill. And I thought to myself, there were a couple times where she had been very close and we were like, okay, we're going to, and I wasn't going out in 2020, and I live in her apartment now, but I live three floors up. But it was like, okay, if I have to go anywhere, I'm masking because I need to make sure I can see her at a moment's notice. Right. And I said to myself, when she goes, I know what I'm going to do. And so on the morning of February 14th, 2021, my dad called me and he said, she's gone now. And he said, what time? He called like 10 minutes after she died because he was with her. And I looked at Matt and I took my phone out. I put on Go Now. And I just let myself cry for those couple of minutes. And that was the first thing I did when she died. I played that song because in my head, it was like that myth that when someone dies, the first thing you're supposed to do is open the window so their soul can fly free. That was my love letter to her, is you are not bound by your body anymore. You are not bound by anything. And my grandmother was like Mary Tyler Moore throwing her hat up in the middle of the street, like magic and joy and this charmer. And she was me times 10, all of my best and only my best qualities times 10. That's where I get it. And so I felt her like a slingshot. Oh, good. Like, I'm not held by this 99-year-old body anymore. I'm going to go wrap myself around the world. And that was me telling her, like, as much as I don't want you to go, you need to go. And you need to go back to your husband, and you need to go see your son, and you need to wrap around the world. Cause I know she's here. I'm an atheist, but I'd rather be wrong than not have her and not feel her in those moments. But that song, as you can imagine, means everything to me. And every year on Valentine's Day, I take a moment to listen to it and to sit with her and to sit with that bittersweet feeling of, as much as I don't want her gone, I know that this was her time to move forward. So yeah, this movie might mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
just a little bit.
I'm sitting here and loving that story. I'm reminded of a couple of things. One, of course, I'll See You in My Dreams from Bruce's last studio album. My brother died on February 13th of last year. And I'd seen Bruce Friday night, February 10th, and then we had tickets to see him in Houston February 14th. So it was just after my brother had died. And so I did get pretty sentimental during I'll See You in My Dreams.
I'm glad you went. How was that? What was the conflict of going? What was the conversation? Who did you go with? I would love to hear this if you want to talk about it.
So we knew it was he was in hospice and we knew it was going to be close. And called my sister, and my brother was living in Houston, mm-hmm. and he was in hospice there. And I had seen him like in December or January. We had gone, and Tara, it was a really, we spent 2 or 3 hours talking in his very depressing hospice nursing home.
Sure.
That, and we just talked about nothing important. We talked about TV shows we had watched and books we had read and my first car I bought with my own money, which he said will always means freedom to him because we would be in that car and we would ride together. Mm-hmm. And after I'd been going, he looked at the clock and said, "Oh my God, you've been here too long. You have to get to Dallas. It's time for you to go." And I said, "Okay." And he held my hand and said, "If this is the last time we see each other." And I said, "No." And he said, "No." He says, "Maybe you'll see me again. Maybe you won't. But I need you to know that you were the best big brother I could have had." And I said, "You were a wonderful little brother. And I'm so happy that we had this time together and we got together." I was ready to come down to Houston and I was going to skip the Friday night show. And my sister said, "First off, Dean would want you to go. Secondly, because of the COVID, still, we're not being in his room. And they're not even letting us sitting in the waiting room. There's nothing you could do except come here and sit in your car." We were planning to see him on that Tuesday. And my wife was coming with me. And one of my friends that lives in Dallas, Timothy, who's been on the podcast multiple times, huge music fan. We met at a book signing and then ended up realizing we both like music and we've gone to a couple of shows together and everything. Yeah, it's really nice. So Timothy said, "Okay, why don't we leave early and I'll get us an early check in the hotel. You and your wife can go see your brother. I'll just work." And so we ended up, he had already passed. So we went there and it felt good. It felt good to be with all these people we love and celebrate. And it was not a sad thing when I'll see you in my dreams came on. But it was this real memory, because when I got in the car after him telling me goodbye, I did play "I'll See You in My Dreams." I played that song to kind of remember. So yeah,
beautiful. Thank you for trusting me with that. Oh, that was lovely. This is what I don't know. This is why we love music. Look
absolutely.
At us attaching these huge losses to music, and the beautiful thing is that we can go listen to that song anytime, and in a way, in that 3 or 4 minutes, your brother, my grandmother, is contained in that song. And Bruce didn't write it about us or for us in that way, but you found yourself in that song, you found your brother in that song, and that's what music can be. It's just another reminder. And this movie is a reminder of that power of music. And our Bruce, who also has experienced loss recently, is, I think Bruce is a real champion for grief. And that might be a weird thing to say, because who wants grief? But he is someone who does not shy away from grief, big or small.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful thing that we've, as his fans, found. There's so many different, some people might take a song like "This Depression" and there might be that grief. There might be significant grief that they experienced during the economic recession. They might, I don't know, like even "Jack of All Trades," like that is such a song about the grief of identity and your identity and work. And he really is a champion for grief in that you can listen to his music and grieve. And he creates a beautiful, safe space for you to feel that. And you're a guy, a lot of big, tough dudes love Bruce. And I'm always so grateful for that, because it tells me that they have the heart of a sweetie.
Yeah.
Because Bruce is not this toxic masculine.
No, he isn't.
It's not, no disrespect necessarily to Kiss, but I don't think Gene Simmons has the most nuanced views on what it is.
Exactly. Around.
But someone like Bruce, there's that part of a poet and the hands of a mechanic.
Yes.
And he lets someone feel, and I think he gives that to a lot of people who maybe don't look like on the outside that they're the kind of person who could cry. But if I saw some big burly bear at a Bruce show sobbing, I'd be like, good. I'm so glad you have this. No yeah. one's going to laugh at you because I'm going to kick their ass. It's just a beautiful thing about our friend Bruce that we love is that he really opens those doors.
Yeah. What was really interesting to me is Jack of all trades is my stepdad was that kind of guy
yeah.
that could fix anything. And so I always think of him when I hear that song. And I think of my stepdad who's now gone. I did want to go back to a couple things. One, like I saw there was a really beautiful article about a young man that had a disability and he had met Bruce and Tougher Than the Rest was his song because he used that as his theme. I'm tougher than the rest. I can get past this. Yeah. I remember a guy was talking about, he said, I want all the time that heaven can allow. And he said that the reason why is because he had cancer.
Got it.
And the lyric says, some men want to die young gloriously. Now get it straight. Now, Mr. That Ain't Me. I want all the time that, you know. Yeah. And so I will not tell her name, but there is someone who I'm hoping to get her on the podcast sometime. But she talked about she was never a Bruce fan.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Mocked her father. Made fun of him because he liked Bruce. Just truly just someone not whatsoever. Then her grandmother died. And she was covered in grief.
Of course.
She was like, you don't understand. My grandmother was everything to me.
That's me.
Nothing against my parents, but my grandmother was everything to me, right?
Yeah, that's me.
And she goes, and I was in the car grieving, and my dad had made me a Bruce mixtape, and Atlantic City came on. Wow. And the lyric, everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. And she said, I played it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because that clinging to that, everything dies, maybe that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. And I think, you know, that, and she said that was the gateway. And then I discovered, and now then, she's
a convert. Yes.
Yeah. She was a convert.
Michelle recently converted. I got chills when you and I said that lyric together, by the way. It's one of my favorite lyrics of all time. I actually have it on a sweatshirt that I bought from like an Etsy designer who makes Bruce stuff. And it's one of my favorite lyrics. And it.
Yeah.
When I don't necessarily believe in reincarnation. And I always say, I don't believe in God, but I believe in my gram. I don't think she's going to show up as like a sparrow or like my baby necessarily, like something like that. But I believe that energy never dies. It's scientifically true. And I do really feel her energy. And in that way, she does come back. And in some ways, reminders of your brother might show up. And that's him coming back. Or something he really believed in and had a passion for, or a value he had, you'll see it echoed in someone else. And you're like, good, okay. Like he's living on, he's here. And so I love that lyric is what really called to her. And it's such a beautiful, whether you could feel that way about a relationship that ended, you could feel that way about
exactly.
It's beautiful.
My wife is, when she lost her mom, she now, every time she hears the wind blow a wind chime that's on our back porch, she goes, Mom's talking to us.
That's nice.
And I love that. I love that a lot.
I have a silly one about my grandmother, if you want to hear it.
I would love to hear it.
So my grandmother was very into butts.
Okay.
As you're sipping, you're like, what is Tara talking about?
Yeah.
My grandmother was very frisky.
Okay.
And you would, like, I'd be watching my Aunt Josephine do the Thanksgiving toast, and I would just feel a little pinch on my butt, and I'd turn around, and there's this impish, beautiful redhead who would just giggle at me and wink or something. And I'm like, Grandpa, like, in the middle of the speaking, like, yelling at her, because of course I loved it. I have only ever brought two boyfriends home. And the first one I brought home, my ex Ed, with whom I'm still very close friends, he was like the third person I called when my grandmother died. Mm-hmm. When she met him, she was like, turn him around. And I went, what? Just turn him around. Oh my God. He gave his credit immediately. And this is why 8 years after Ed and I have broken up, we are still family and see each other at least once a year, even though he lives halfway across the country.
Yeah.
Ed turned around and she gave him a pinch and she goes, you know what? He's sturdy enough for you. He can stay. They loved each other. Ed still has a little thing that she crocheted in his wallet. Like, he keeps a little part of her with him. They were close. She just loves butts. So my thing is, for some people, it's a penny on the ground. It's a wind chime. It's a cardinal. It's something. Yeah. Anytime I see a glove on the ground, that is my grandmother pinching my butt. We were at our first Thanksgiving without her. And of course, it was so sad because I kept thinking she would heckle my family during the speech, like, lovingly. But she'd be like interrupting, and then I'll be like, Mom, she's like, I'm just being me. I don't know what to tell you. And so I couldn't be in the room for the speech because not hearing her voice there, really, I couldn't do it. I was not ready to hear that yet. And I still have been leaving the room during the speech. I'm not ready yet. And I left our family Thanksgiving and I was looking at the street and there was a like clear rubber glove on the ground in the sort of okay symbol, like the hand gesture.
Yeah.
And we just stopped and I looked at it and I was like, this broad is pinching my ass from the great beyond. I knew, like, this just sense came over me and I'm just like, yeah, I know. Okay. And so a couple of times, if I've been having like a weird moment, I see a glove on the ground and it's in some kind of configuration where it's like flat. And I'm like, that's her. That would be exactly her.
Yeah.
So that's my little gesture.
I love that.
Weird one.
A very good friend of mine, Sarah Hickman, covered a song, We Are Each Other's Angels, which is absolutely beautiful. And part of the lyrics are, we are each other's angels. We meet when it is time. We keep each other going and we show each other signs.
That isn't a sign, right? No, it's a, and part of it is like that wishful thinking and us assuming, but really, and it's hard to explain to a skeptic, but sometimes it really just does come to you. There's something specific. This bird was something that was in your backyard a lot when you were a kid. So now you see that bird and you feel like it's your mom, and great. To a skeptic, I would say, what's the problem? Why would you have to be more right than allowing me my feeling of connection to someone I love?
Yeah.
Well, I'll fight you. I'll fight you right now. No.
Exactly. I love that. So that was a fun tangent. I'm feeling all warm and now.
I want to tell you one more story because I think it might blow your mind a bit. And it is somewhat related.
Okay.
So my bucket list of living legends is very short. Okay. I think Brian Wilson, I've probably missed my chance. Brian Wilson is really the only one that was like up there where it's something I should have done and I will kick myself forever.
Yeah.
But the other one I had.
Before you tell that story, I'll tell you this one. The last time I saw him was two summers ago. And I was lucky enough to talk to David Marks, who has written his biography. And he said that Brian tours because, one, he loves hearing the band behind him play his music so beautifully. Two, the audience sends him so much love that he gets it. And three, he loves room service. Last time I saw him, I was like, okay, I don't need to go see Brian again. I did not feel like he was enjoying. Even though I trust David that he was, he had to use a walker and everything. But I've told this before, a few years ago, before the pandemic, Brian was in Jersey, and Bruce joined him on stage for two songs. I think they did Bob Arand or something. I don't remember what two songs. And Tara, I've said this in front of my son. Forget him getting married. Forget seeing grandkids. Forget his being born. If I could have been there and seen Bruce and Brian on stage, take me away. God, that take me away. Great. What else, right? Yeah, what else could there be? Like
when I saw Paul McCartney for the first time and Billy Joel came out and they did, I Saw Her Standing There, which is one of my top five Beatles songs. And yeah. I don't remember it because I screamed the entire time. Yes.
Yes.
So after Brian, the person I had to cross off was Darlene Love,
okay,
who, God bless her, is like 82 and still touring. And to all of you listening at home, go see her Christmas concert. She does a Christmas concert every year. She tours all over. It is incredible. She looks better in leather pants than I ever will. The band she has behind her is great. It's well worth your money. So I saw Darlene Love. And this was the year that my grandmother had died. So she died in February. And I saw Darlene in December. And I was very emotional because, again, Darlene is in her 80s. This is an artist that I adore. And she started singing. She started with her 60s songs. And I just started welling up. And I was like, wow, I'm in the presence of this legend who I've loved as a fan since I watched 20 Feet from Stardom, which, again, highly recommend to anybody who hasn't seen it. It is a documentary about backing singers. And they interview Darlene and they interview a number of other greats like Mary Clayton.
Yeah.
And they talk about how it feels to not be the star, but to be this person right. supporting the star. And it's a great documentary that really gives flowers
I
to.
I really agree. It's a
phenomenal watch. It's for like real music fans. You all will love it.
Absolutely.
But when watching Darlene, I'm getting emotional.
Sure.
And I'm sitting there and we're sitting in the back and I have a mask on because it's still 2021 and all that.
Yeah.
And of course the end is Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. And the music starts playing. And I think you can all hear that in your head. Sure. You all know. Yeah. And all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I feel just this white like aura next to me. And I'm like, the fuck? And then I feel what feels like a hand on my shoulder. And now my grandmother, everything was her hands. Okay. She taught herself how to crochet in a factory during World War II using the red and white string that you would wrap cake boxes in.
Wow. She'd
been crocheting for almost 70 years. She taught crochet in a school once my grandfather died. She was a marvelous cook, made the meanest rice pudding you will ever hope to have. Again, butt pincher. Everything with her was those beautiful hands.
Okay.
And I know what those hands feel like. And I felt her hand on my shoulder and this white, warm light. And my grandmother was this vibrant redhead, but she always wore white. She looked like a beautiful cult leader, and I would sign up for that cult any day of the week.
Okay. Yeah.
Any day of the week. Again, the woman was and is magic personified and joy coming out of deep trauma, but the richest joy. And so white is appropriate for her. And I know white is like the celestial color and all that, but I felt it. And again, I'm an atheist. I do not believe in God. I have not believed in heaven for many years. And I felt her. And I just started sobbing. I was like shaking, convulsing, sobbing. And this was not a song that she and I had shared together. Darlene Love was not an artist that she was like a big fan of in any way. Like it, nothing. So that's why I'm like, this had to be some kind of sign because it wasn't something that was so evocative of her. It felt like she took that moment to just tell me that she was there. And Of course, the song takes on a different meaning if you're singing it or hearing it about your dead grandmother who you miss, and you're like, I just wish you were here for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I sobbed for 2 hours, could not stop. I had poor sweet Matt literally like holding me up as we left the show. And I'm just like, it was the closest thing I've ever had in my life to a religious experience before or after. I was raised a Catholic. I'm a practicing Jew in honor of my other side of the family now, but still an atheist Jew. But it was the closest thing I've ever had to a religious experience. And it was because of someone that Bruce loves and wrote songs for. Yeah. So that's how we're tying it back to Bruce. And I saw Bruce come out and give Darlene an award at her latest.
Yeah. Were you there that night?
I was there, and the scream that I scrumped could have shattered every window in the venue. I screamed like it was Beatlemania, like in Ed Sullivan's studio, not far from Ed Sullivan's studio, maybe 10 blocks.
Yeah.
I'm sure Bruce heard me specifically in that audience and was like, who the hell is this bitch? Lost my mind. But yes. So wait, what were you saying? Sorry.
No, I love that. I will send you a link. John Hyatt does a song Through Your Hands, which I think you will admire a lot because it talks about giving life and how you get through problems in your life through your hands. So I think you will like it a lot. So I did want to this is so much fun, but I do want to pick on the crappy priest in going back to Sing Street because it was just a perfect villain. It is everything that's wrong with the classical church.
Yes.
The idea that the rules say you're supposed to wear black shoes. I can't afford black shoes. I don't care. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
And the great scene, and once again, we won't spoil too much of it, but there is a great scene toward the end where he and the band look at each other, Connor does, and say, this may get us in tons of trouble, and we may never get a chance to play again together.
Yeah.
Do we do it, yay or nay? And they all go, yes. Even down to the bully, which, well, is that not a great scene when they go to the bully and talk to him? And they do that song in tribute, and the crowd goes crazy. I just loved that moment of just pure joy, because there's always been that time. All of us have someone that we feel like we just wish we could tell them politely to go to hell. And they just do this in a great way.
And it's, and you're right. It's such a great villain in that it's a very real thing. And that priest represents conservatism, yes, and the old guard, yes, but the kids aren't, I think the kids could be much more disrespectful than they wind up being, like, really. Yeah. They're not that bad. They just want to wear a little stage makeup and play some instruments. They're really not doing anything that bad. It's very easy to root for them. I don't feel like this movie is particularly flagrant against the church, truthful about the church. It's not so incendiary, which again makes for an even better villain. They're not taking pot shots, really. They're like, yeah, this priest absolutely exists now, let alone then, depending on what neighborhood you're in. If a priest is, oh, I think that boy is dressing a little too flamboyantly, it's going to be a problem. And it's this older person who maybe feels repressed and is projecting. And that's not the kid's problem. It shouldn't be. There is a way to instill discipline in kids without instilling fear or breaking their hearts or breaking their souls. So yeah, it's a good character in that the scary thing about a villain in this case is that it's very real.
Yeah.
And it absolutely, that priest existed, and the people who wrote the movie have people like that in their lives. We've all, maybe, hopefully not, but a lot of us have a teacher that has tried to crush something in us, exterminate this flame of being different or being creative or seeing the world differently or learning differently. We've all had that teacher, whether we were a good student or a bad student or needed something we weren't getting at home, we've had that presence. And yeah. And so I think the movie really did something smart there by not just making it a bully, but really taking it one up the ladder and making it an adult. And obviously we were going to root for these kids anyway, but yeah, I think the villain is written very effectively. The movie is so satisfying because they get their moment of giving him that comeuppance, and he's just left to stand there and like gawk and be like, oh my God, what's happening here? Sorry, buddy. Welcome to the 80s.
I just talked about on one of my other podcasts, my co-host Luke, Karen, and I taking turns of picking something of pop culture to discuss. And Karen said, I want to talk Barbie. I want to talk the movie. And we said, okay, that's fine. And Lucy Boynton has a small cameo in Barbie, by the way, very small part. I
remember this.
Yes. She doesn't talk. She's just in the back. She's Proust Barbie. Yes.
I guess maybe she's like friends with Greta Gerwig or something.
Yes, she is. That's exactly because I was going to tell you that HBO or Max offers you, you can listen to it with Greta's commentary.
Oh, I didn't know that. I would love to watch it again with that. That's exactly.
Yeah. And she is very fascinating in it. And she talks about the people who did this out of favors and friends, everything about it. So I was a little nervous, and I would love to know your thought on this. Okay. Is Lucy's character, Raphina, right?
Yes.
Raphina appears to be much older than Connor in the movie. And that was a little uncomfortable for me, enough that I went to Mr. Google or Ms. Google and said, what are the ages of the characters in Stranger Things?
Tell me.
And she's 16, he's 15.
Okay, I guess that's...
So that's fine. No, that's a year. Okay. But I was like, is she 25 and she's running off the 15-year-old?
How old are the actors?
I do not know that. Wait, we can look.
Let's take a look. Yeah, I'm going to look up right now. Lucy Boynton. Yeah,
so she was born in 94.
He's 30. And,
and he was born in...
So that's a much bigger difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in real life, yes, but in the movie, they're not.
Yes, yeah,
but yeah. It is interesting that he went for the older, because I get, yeah. In this case, you'll see movies where the kid is in love with like his friend's older sister,
right?
And it would be weird if he's he's 15 dating a 19-year-old. I have something to say about that. That seems awful.
Yes, I agree. That does seem a little weird. Yeah,
being 1 year older in that range, at some point there's going to be a statutory gap of one's older than the other, but in that case it's like the context is key.
So what do you think happens to our heroes after the credits roll?
I really hope that they make it. Like, I really do. My take on Born to Run was more pessimistic. In this case, I can't be as pessimistic. I want them to make it work. And I don't know if he's going to wind up a rock star, but he might wind up a music producer. He might wind up a music video director. I can't be too optimistic on this podcast, can I, with my answers to these questions? But yeah, let's say that he winds up being like a famous music video director.
He certainly had the eye for it.
Exactly.
Coming up with it, yeah.
Multiple talents here. So I think, or maybe he's like a Tony Visconti type. He's that. And maybe she models, but maybe she works for a modeling agency instead.
I like that a lot. Yeah, I am a believer in happy endings. And so I want to think that they made it work. They're awful young. But it does have, not to spoil too much of it, but there is a feeling of Thunder Road and Born to Run. We got this town's full of losers. We're pulling out of here to win. So I hope they make it. I hope they make it a lot.
That's what I want. Like, they're not bad kids. And like, there is some support at home if anything falls through. Like, they do have their friends there at least. And he's got his family. He's got his brother. I don't think it's not something like they're escaping a war-torn nation where they're never going to be able to go back and their family's going to be gone when they get back. It is somewhat low stakes. Mm-hmm. As long as they don't sink,
Yeah,
You know,
exactly. Yes.
I got nervous about
That is something thought about that too.
That a quad vehicle, do they know? But
absolutely, yes.
But yeah, I want them to make it in some way.
Any other thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, I love this movie. I would also recommend Blinded by the Light for Bruce fans. It's like, why haven't you seen it yet? It's a really sweet story. And I'm drawing a blank on other movies that are similar to those two. I will send them your way to recommend in future episodes if I do. But those two are such a great, you're right, it's like a great double feature companion screening.
What I'm smiling about, Tara, is that I was going to end. So what are we talking about next month, Tara? So we will now leave that as to be determined. Because at this point, I want you on here every 4 to 6 weeks.
I love that. And then we have Doctor Who.
Yes, we do. We have Doctor Who. We've signed up. Charles is ecstatic that you're going to join. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. And we have New Who coming up in May 11th, I think, is we've got the latest Doctor showing up. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I do want to check it out. I've been on a long break. I watched a little of Capaldi.
Yeah.
I've been on a long break since. I have some issues with Moffat as a showrunner, which I will talk about at length on the other podcast. I could rant about that for 6 hours.
I think what's going to be good is Russell T. Davies is back running it. Mm-hmm. And he has hired Moffat to write a story.
That is exactly the right configuration.
Yeah, I think that's what we said too. We think that would be, I think that would be really good. I think they work really well together. So it's going to be good. All right, so Tara, if someone wants to reach you, how can they? Right. And please talk about how wonderful your blog Substack is, because I'm so happy that I get a little smile every time I see a new update on it.
Thank you so much. So you can find me online on Instagram and Twitter at Sweaty Lamar. I've put out music under Sweaty Lamar, which is, of course, a tribute to Hedy Lamarr. That music is streaming on Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube and all that. My current passion project, which I don't think I'll be letting go of anytime soon, is my Substack. Substack is a blogging platform where if you sign up as a free subscriber to my blog, it gets sent right to your email inbox. So you don't even have to click on a link or remember to go check it out. It'll come right to your inbox. That blog is called XOXO Gossip Gian Caspro. I'm the Gian Caspro. And I write a weekly, as I mentioned before, a weekly update with personal essays, pop culture, stupid little musings from my silly little brain, and different things I'm reading and watching. And if you like this, you will probably enjoy that. And that's taragiancaspro.substack.com. Again, it is mostly free to sign up. I do some occasional paid posts because I am laid off right now. Yeah. And I always tell people, if you don't want to spend the $50 a year, but you want to give me $5, I will make you a paid subscriber. So just get in contact with me.
Absolutely.
Literally the fact that anyone has given me a dollar, let alone you, who thank you, that anyone has paid for my writing in any way is the most humbling thing, because I've not been writing for very long. I really only started writing within the last 5 years. So it's very humbling, and I appreciate every single cent and vote of confidence from anybody. So thank you all.
Tara, you are one of my favorite people. And
I know, I love... This is, for the record, for people who are this is literally the second time Jesse and I have ever spoken.
Yes, it is.
We set up the podcast and we have not, we spoke that first podcast and we've spoken now. Yes. So this is a real deep ass bond, folks.
Well,
I'm looking forward to getting to hang out with you for
a minute. I am too. And that's why I said I'm already like, okay, yeah, the next, let's figure out what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, I'm down whatever you want.
Yeah, we do it. Listeners, go check out the Instagram. I'm going to have all the links in the show note. Sign up for the Substack. You will be very happy. If you got a few extra bucks, throw it her way. I know she'll appreciate it. Tara, till next time, we're going to hang out, and I appreciate you.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right, listeners, thank you. Be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. Thank you for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed our discussion, I hope you will check out other episodes of the podcast. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans around the world about the power and magic of music. Please follow me on all my socials. I'm still on Twitter, aka X, as Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Setlusting Bruce. The show and I are both on Facebook as well. I'm a part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. I am part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. Both Perfectly Good Podcast and Setlisting Bruce are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where there are dozens of great podcasts about music. Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. I'm joined each week by Lou and Karen on Last Best Hope for Conversation as we discuss Babylon 5 and other pop culture topics. This show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And I would mean the world to me if you could send me feedback on any of the podcasts. Or please reach out to schedule time for you to join me on a future episode. Getting to talk to people about their love of music and their favorite musicians and other creative endeavors is a passion of mine. And I hope that the conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.